been a long, long, long time coming, but I know.
Bob Dylan?
A new Big Dog Ball Talk book coming out. Come on, that's not fucking Bob Dylan.
Sorry.
Man. That's a paraphrase. I believe that's Sam Cooke, maybe?
Sam Cooke? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Change Gone Come?
Just
when you very started off, you had a bit of a Dylan twang there. And Dylan's on my mind. You know, the new movie, I haven't seen it yet. I do plan to go. Yeah, that's more like it. Matt's great at impressions, in case anyone didn't know. Everyone knows by now, though, for sure.
Semi-professional amateur at impressions. Yeah. Pretty much whatever you want, I can do it. And I think they're good. So but it really, it's kind of like
I think they're great.
Jokes. At the end of the day, I've said it before, as long as I think the joke's funny, I don't really give a fuck if there's a reaction from anyone else.
I've noticed that about you.
Yeah, I think that might not be like the best way to practice it. Like if you're a stand-up comedian, it's probably not a good way to go. But if you're just kind of going through life, mulling around, I think it's actually a pretty good way to do things.
I agree. I'm not as brave as you, Matt, in those situations. So yeah, I admire it. You know, when you make your own humor, everyone else is just kind of silent, sitting around. it's great fun, either way. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, that reminds me. I saw a joke the other day. Listened to a joke. Heard a joke. I'm not sure which way do you want me to put it, but
did you read it?
I'm gonna give you guys a quick joke to lead off the podcast before we get into a loaded show. Tons to break down. Obviously, we did not have a Friday show. Shout out to the boys and people over at Animal Boy. Excuse me. For doing what they do best, throwing down in our hometown. Jordan was unable to make it, but still a good turnout.
I sent someone in my stead. Yes.
A beautiful, you guys, beautiful,
I think,
woman.
Like even better. No, it's my mother.
Yes, that's exactly who I was talking about.
It's inappropriate.
But here's the joke for you guys before we get into all the craziness that's gone on in the last week across the NBA. A farmer notices that some city slicker moves in next door to his farm.
Uh-oh.
And he's like, wait, what's going on here? So he goes up, knocks on the door, and the city slicker there, dressed as a farmer, he says, I've always wanted to be a farmer. I wanted to get out of the city. I'm done with being a farmer. I want to be a farmer. I'm done with being a city guy. I want to be a farmer. And the farmer says, yeah, you know what? That's great. And you know, here we love our neighbors. You know, we have a great sense of community. We're going to throw you a big shindig in my barn across the way to celebrate your arrival. And the city slicker, the new farmer, goes, oh, that's great. That's exactly what I've been looking for. That's what I've been itching for. It's what I wanted out of life. So this is great to hear. And the farmer says, yep, it's going to be a big party. Gonna be some drinking. Gonna be some fighting, gonna be some fucking. It's gonna be a great night.
Hold on.
And then the city slicker, the new farmer, goes, oh, that sounds great. What time do you want me to, should I get there? And the farmer turns to the city slicker and goes, it's just gonna be me and you, so show up whenever you want.
Oh, man. I think this is based on a true story up around our neck of the woods. That's a good one, Matt. Very good. Very good.
What's not good, though? Is the relationship between Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat.
Oh, what a segue. What a segue.
Officially.
Yeah. Jimmy is now, the city slicker. Pat Riley is the old farmer. That's what this story is based on. Love it.
And I think if you asked Jimmy Butler, you'd probably say Pat Riley is trying to fuck on him. So this is all makes sense. It all comes together in the end. But yeah, Jimmy Butler officially declaring that he would like to play anywhere other than the Miami Heat, which is crazy because, again, like I said, I gave him a New Year's resolution, and Jimmy Butler, being ever the contrarian that he is, immediately says, fuck your resolution suggestion. We are breaking the band up.
Exactly.
Because he's lost his joy. He's lost his smile. He doesn't enjoy being there anymore. Just a weird timing. The Heat have actually been pretty solid. They've lost. They had a brutal loss to the Jazz on Saturday night. But no Jimmy Butler, because after this whole media tirade, he went on saying that he isn't happy there. Doesn't like the management. Things aren't going the way he wants them to go. They suspended him for 7 games. You got to think, by the time those 7 games come up, either Jimmy's not going to, he's going to refuse to play, or they're going to have a trade by then. And from what the reports are saying, the trade market for Jimmy Butler hasn't quite been that appetizing in the eyes of the Miami Heat, which is something we kind of predicted. Going to be tough to lure a team into giving you any kind of a good trade package for a guy who has said he's going to opt out of his deal this year, test free agency, or you get a 37-year-old with attitude problems that is kind of having a mediocre-ish season for kind of a number one option type of player. You know, you're now going to be paying him, you know, potentially if he opts back in, you know, another $50 million. Like, this is a very hard contract to trade and not really an enticing one for a lot of people. But I do like that he said he just doesn't give a shit. He'll go anywhere now. And that really opens things up from the usual, oh, yeah, 2-3 suitors. You know, anybody could get in on the Jimmy Butler sweepstakes if you really want to call him that.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder what type of a play that is for him. Like, if he really means that, or if he just, you know, wants to get out of there at all costs. It's weird. Like, Jimmy always seems to end his tenure with teams in these sort of, like, a way that you wouldn't expect, like, weirdly, animus. There's animosity always, you know, at every one of his stops. And so I guess we shouldn't be surprised. It is coming at a, yeah, just a weird time, kind of, you know, dog, or not dog days, but sort of middle of the season here, where I wonder why his mind has sort of been made up now all of a sudden. And it's kind of funny when his agent got all mad at Shams a couple weeks ago about, you know, all this, when it turns out, yeah, that's sort of exactly what was going on. But yeah, like, if it's true that he'll go anywhere, then yeah, that does make it more interesting. Like, you look around at teams that could really use him as a finishing piece, and it's like, you know, there's the teams we've talked about, you know, teams that you would imagine would be attractive for him, like a Golden State or even a Houston, you know, some of these other teams that have sort of been rumored to be on his radar. But then you look, if it really is open to anyone, like, what about a team like the Pacers, a team like that, that's really kind of struggled on the defensive side of things, doesn't necessarily have a great closer. So these things that Jimmy can sort of bring to the table.
Good amount of young talent over there too. I'm sure they wouldn't mind to tap into.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, maybe this does widen the, you know, the amount of suitors out there. And, you know, it feels like, to me at least, the season's just started, but we are about a month away from the trade deadline. I think it's February 8th this year, or roundabouts. You know, that's closer than I think people realize. So I think, you know, at this point now, there is motivation for both sides to just try and get this done. But again, I think this has been talked about too. When you look at a contract that is as big as Jimmy Butler's, the Heat aren't going to say, okay, we need to get something for him, and then go and trade for like a shitty contract that they're going to be stuck with then for the next few years. Like, there is a scenario in my mind where, you know, knowing how shrewd of negotiators the Heat are and Pat Riley, where they don't move him, and it is this awkward thing for the rest of the season where, you know, he's playing, he's not, he refuses, you know, what you just laid out there, whether he just, you know, goes home, you know, there's a quote unquote injury or something where he's shut down. I could see that happening. I hope it doesn't, you know, for the sake of the NBA, for fans, just for it being fun. Cause there is a lot of, there are places where he would go and you know, help put teams over the top, as long as he's out there healthy and, you know, motivated to, you know, be the Jimmy that we know he can be. So yeah, it'll be very interesting. This wasn't really necessarily on my bingo card for this year. It's even more interesting than your typical disgruntled star thing, because it's Pat Riley and it's Jimmy Butler. It's like an immovable object and a fucking unstoppable force. So whatever happens is going to be probably a bit more dramatic, even than usual in these type of situations. But he could definitely help teams, that's for sure. So I hope to God he gets moved. I still think, I mean, I don't know if any other ones have popped up in your mind since, you know, in the last few days, but I still think the Houston one makes a lot of sense to me. So, you know, if I had to put my money, it'd probably be there.
Yeah, I still think that's probably one of the better ones. Because again, I don't think that he'd obviously, at this point, he could go anywhere. And I do kind of think that this is kind of the one of the only seasons where, you know, a big name like that could be traded to multiple different places, because everybody's kind of in this jumble, both conferences. Like, you could add a Jimmy Butler to a bubble team here that's kind of in that play-in mix. And now they're, you know, you're getting into the top six. So I still really like the Houston idea. They've got a lot of tradable guys out there. I think some young talent and trade some draft picks that would be interesting for the Heat to acquire. Just looking through it, I mean, again, like, if they were willing to give up maybe one or two people that were key in their lineup to upgrade, I mean, the Cavaliers have been needing a dominant three for quite a while. Jimmy Butler to the 30-4 Cleveland Cavaliers would be pretty disgusting. I mean, the Magic could probably use a guy like Jimmy as well. Just another veteran guy, kind of similar to the Houston trade. I think that he probably fits a little bit better in Houston because they've at least got some shooters there, whereas Orlando really doesn't have any three-point shooting right now, and adding Jimmy Butler really wouldn't help that case. I do like the Pacers shout-out. I think is a good one. I think that that could work. Even Memphis, I think if they could put together a convincing
that
enough
is
package,
an interesting one.
I think Memphis would be a good fit there. Him and Ja Morant would be quite the duo as long as they don't butt heads. I think that him, Desmond Bain, Jaren Jackson, that would be quite the foursome to deal with. And the last team that I think I'll mention here that I think would probably love to go out there and try and get him and maybe just push Jaden McDaniels to the four.
Maybe
this was Julius Randle. But the Minnesota Timberwolves, man, I really think they need that shakeup. They need a bucket getter. Yeah, exactly. They need to get something going there because, things are not quite how they were expected to pan out coming into the season. They need a bucket getter out there. Just give Anthony Edwards some relief. We'll be talking about the Timberwolves a little bit later here as well after their kind of weird weekend finishes. But, those are some of the other teams I think I would circle. But, really, I just want to see him moved and see what we can go here because, again, having him on that team is kind of detrimental long-term too. I mean, you saw them last night. They play a shitty Utah Jazz team and get absolutely blown out of the water. And that's not really an indicative thing of a locker room that is feeling good. Cause they're even without Jimmy Butler, they still have enough talent that they should be, having no problem walking through a tanking team like Utah. And that was at home too. Like that was a very, very embarrassing loss. So I do think that I think Tyler Hero got interviewed in the locker room as well, and he was talking about how this is kind of bullshit and that he's not really happy with the way management is kind of handling this whole situation. So I do think they need to make that move because if they let this fester, it could kind of be a 76ers situation where people just get frustrated with the entirety of the drama and everything going on, and then you don't just have one disgruntled star, you've got a whole disgruntled locker room.
Correct. Yeah. And that's what I mean. I'm not ruling that out at all. Like, you know, especially with these new apron rules and everything, like it is harder to get trades done. That's kind of how they're designed, especially in season like this, where you've got a team that doesn't feel like they have a lot of leverage in dealing a guy who's made a public trade request. So yeah, I could see this getting messy. I like all the teams you shouted out there though. Whether you're talking about Memphis, the Cavs would be crazy as well. Two teams, those two, the Cavs and the Grizzlies, like the sort of dominant two-way wing player is something both of them have been, missing this entire time. They've got great, guys on either end of that in the front court and the back court. So yeah, love both those ideas. Even, what about a team like the Nuggets who are kind of struggling?
If they could put something together.
Like something centered around Michael Porter Jr. going back, like does he entice the Heat as sort of a younger player who maybe you can say recoups some of that value? I don't know. But, if I'm the Nuggets, I'm definitely listening to an offer on that. One other place I'm looking at, I mean, I think this is very unlikely, but Matt, if you're the Thunder watching all of this happen and you have all your chest, of draft picks and everything, would you consider it? You could obviously put forth a very tempting offer mainly around that draft capital, which again, you're going to have to use at some point. If you're the Thunder, you can't just draft a million players every year.
Yeah. We've been begging them to make a big trade for a while. I mean, the Alex Caruso trade was really the only one they've made.
And I don't think any picks were involved in that, really. I think it was just straight up for Giddy. So you're looking at, this situation. Like I think what would stop the Thunder from doing it is, Jimmy's too much of a risk to sort of throw off the great chemistry that team's got going. But just in theory, putting him in there sort of at that 3-4 swingman spot, that's sort of the one thing the Thunder, I think, in my opinion, need is more of a veteran presence because they've got a lot of young guys on that team. Caruso is kind of their one big vet, but I think Jimmy's even more of a sort of respected vet, been in the league a bit longer. That's something you might want to consider. Again, pretty unlikely with how good that team already is, but there's lots of interesting sort of options that the Heat have here when they're fielding calls. But again, it seems like from the most recent reporting and how this has all played out, like who's going to give a really, really good package to get Jimmy Butler now, mm-hmm. If you're a team that's sort of on the bubble? Because again, he's not, unfortunately for Jimmy, he is a playoff game changer. We've seen that in recent years, but he's had so many injury problems and he's so old now that I think, you know, a lot of front offices are like, is this really going to be worth it when potentially we could revisit it in the summer? So not a lot of leverage as well, which you always have to, you know, consider in these talks, obviously.
Well, just to look at it, like they could give up, I'm just counting it out right now. Let's just say they could give up two of their own first round picks, their first round pick this year, unprotected, first round pick for 2026 as well, and send back, they own the Miami Heat's first round pick in 2025. So they could send all three of those picks plus Lou Dort, Isaiah Joe, and Aaron Wiggins for Jimmy Butler. I think that would be a fucking steal for the Thunder. And the Heat get three solid players that they can put in minutes right now. They're all under contract for an extended period of time here. They're all somewhat, you know, they're under like 26, 27 each. All can give you quality minutes right now. I think all of them actually would kind of be a good fit for the Heat. And then really you lose a couple bench players and then you get like Isaiah, you get a Lou Dort on steroids with Jimmy Butler. So you give up three first round picks of the like 20 that you have over the next three seasons. So the Thunder, if they did that, it would be game over, I think. But again, I do think it is
vetoed.
It's tough because when you have a guy like SGA that's supposed to be, you know, a potential MVP front runner, like does he kind of feel like he's going to get bumped down the lineup when Jimmy Butler gets there? Does Butler think that he's going to be the alpha dog there?
Is he going to recognize challenge with that, Jimmy too? Yep. Yeah.
I really think that, if you're going to a team, you have to know that he's going to be that the big dog in the locker room, because when he's not, that's when he starts to get a little bit snippy and get disgruntled. We've seen it happen in multiple different places. Even Minnesota, he was mad about it. I mean, the Sixers picking Tobias Harris over him, obviously it was a bad call. But again, he wants to be the alpha. He wants to be that guy. So I think that, it's hard to find a team that he'd be able to come in there and just kind of dominate his way through. That's why, again, if you're picking between one of the top two teams in the conference, I do think that Cleveland would be that one, because Donovan Mitchell, don't know if he's going to put up that much of a fight. I know Mobley's not going to, and Garland and Jared Allen are just kind of there for the ride. One of them could even end up getting traded to get Jimmy Butler in a potential trade. Jared Allen might be... he probably wouldn't be the guy, but Jared Allen's not even having a good season this year, honestly. Darius Garland being dangled could be enough to get done. But it's going to be an interesting trade saga no matter what. Yep. I just really hope that we do get a trade soon and it's not just going to be, he's disgruntled. We're actually going to shut him down for the year. He has some surgery he has to get. Or they just say, fuck it, we're just going to play out the contract.
Yeah, exactly. That's worst case. Again, could see it happening very easily with how fucking crazy the parties involved are and how hard-headed they can be. But yeah, hopefully we get a trade because that'll be fun.
Well, moving on to some more of the wild action that was going on over the weekend. I mentioned the Minnesota Timberwolves there a little bit in passing as a potential Jimmy Butler suitor. A really weird finish pulling the Zach LaVine from last year. I actually think this is becoming a almost commonplace now in the NBA. Score 50 points, but lose. Anthony Edwards,
to the
career high. Yes, to the Pistons. 53 points, the best scoring performance of his career, and they lose to a sub-500 Pistons team that is starting to catch fire a little bit here, but they're still the Pistons. Not anything that could be super concerning, but you look at this game, and this is exactly kind of the issue we've talked about. Anthony Edwards has talked about it at large throughout the season. They do not have a single other scorer, a guy who can go out there and actually get a bucket other than Anthony Edwards right now. Going into the season, we thought Dante DiVincenzo would be that guy coming off the bench, being a fourth quarter closer. He's been horrible this season. 2-for-6 game for him on this one. He's been shooting the ball like dog shit all year. 5 points in this one. Mike Conley, 0-for-4 in this one. The second highest score in the game, only other player on the Timberwolves to even break double digits, was Julius Randle, who shot 50%, 17-7-6. Like, those are solid numbers. I think that it's kind of tough for Randle because those are good numbers. I don't think that he had a bad game by any means. I think he played his role well in that starting five. But Like, you have Rudy Gobert. He's a zero offensively. You have Jaden McDaniels, another zero offensively. And then, yeah, you get zero from Mike Conley, a combined 12 points from Nikhil Alexander and Dante DiVincenzo. So all your backcourt combined outside of Anthony Edwards, you're getting 12 fucking points. Like, this is a it's time to start ringing the bells, I think, in Minnesota and start fucking panicking because this is not going to work. Maybe you find a way to heal up Dillingham a little bit quicker. You got to do something. Maybe throw Joe Ingles in there, see if he can shake it up a little. I don't know. The Canadian Leonard Miller, maybe we can get him some burn. I'm not sure, but
why not? Terrence Shannon?
As it's going right now, though, like, this year is really getting wasted for Anthony Edwards. And I mean, he hasn't had, I wouldn't say an insane season by any means, but he has had multiple huge performances like this that, again, are just kind of being wasted on this mediocre Timberwolves team.
Yes, yes. And yeah, agree with all that. I mean, we've talked about this already this year. Mike Conley looks like this might be it. Once again, I'll put it in quotation marks, you know, entering a different phase of his career. Like, he is so important for this team, the steady hand that he brings. And he did have 5 assists in this one. But again, to just miss everything out there, he's kind of too old to be that much of a difference maker defensively anymore. He still knows where to be, but he's just not going to be hounding anyone full court or really locking anyone down. And yeah, if you can't be that, like, you know, you go back to the Mike Conley in his prime, and it's obviously unfair to compare him to that now, but you know, you look at the decline that we've seen, he would slip to the rim, drive in there. He was really creative at finishing. He was a good sort of backdoor cutter when he was off ball. Obviously he'd hit his threes, get to the mid range. He had a good floater game. Like, so many things offensively that he had, just they're just not there anymore. So all he is sort of this veteran presence that can bring the ball up, whatever. But now Minnesota has transitioned into letting Anthony Edwards have the ball in that high pick and roll way more. And so Mike Conley's just kind of standing around a lot of the time. So that's just, like you said, just kind of a wasted zero offensively. And then, you know, you look around, even Julius Randle, like, offensively, yes, it's great that he's there for sort of the shot creation. He's really the only other guy outside of Ant that can do that, like you said, but he was a team low minus 20 when he was out there because defensively, when he's not on and sort of locked in with the group, he makes a lot of dumbass mistakes. And he doesn't always compete on that end. And you saw that, the sort of up and downness throughout his entire career, you know, when he was with the Knicks. That's why he's so frustrating to a lot of Knicks fans. Like, even in this one, that's like, he had a good offensive game, 17 points. That's really not going to get it done. When you're supposed to be sort of the second scorer, on this team who has all the opportunity in the world, even only taking 12 shots. Like, he's a bit passive. I think he's still trying to figure out how he fits into this team. So you go down the line, like, not only is DiVincenzo been a bit of a disappointment, Naz Reid hasn't been sort of the six man type that we've wanted to see or expected to see this year either. And again, like, both of those guys, they can get their own shots some of the time, especially with DiVincenzo sort of off the bounce. He's great, but he's way more effective. Both of these guys are more effective when you have sort of defenses kind of collapsing in on certain guys or certain sort of sides of the floor, and they're there to sort of hit those open shots. And the Timberwolves just aren't generating that this year because, again, you're putting the ball in Anthony Edwards' hands. He has 53 points. That's great. He was hot from three like he has been all year. Two assists? You only get two assists in this entire game? Like, that was the thing I said coming into the year. The next developmental stage for him was to be a playmaker. We all knew he was going to have the ball more. And we all knew that we're pointing out, a lot of these guys sort of need to be set up on the Timberwolves, to be successful. That is his responsibility now. This is firmly his team. He's got the ball. The usage is up. He's got to go and make that happen. And he hasn't quite taken that step. Like, offensively, we know what he can do. We know how explosive he can be. He's one of the best players in the league. But he's got to add that, because I think that's sort of, you know, what you expect of your superstar. Not only do you, put up the points yourself, but you make everyone else around you better. He's just not doing that right now. And even a guy like Rudy Gobert, one of the few sort of advantages that Minnesota had physically in this game, because Detroit sneakily has got a lot of big guys, like, Cade is obviously big positionally. Asar Thompson's there. Had a really good game in this one, especially early on. Rudy actually has some size advantage, you know, in the paint as a five. He didn't score a basket till the fourth fucking quarter. And that's another thing. Like, if you're going to have Rudy, you're going to be paying this guy out. You know, everyone knows it's mostly for the defense, but, like, when he's looked his best, it's when he is, you know, in that pick and roll, rolling hard to the rim and dunking it and getting offensive rebounds, sort of putbacks and things like that. They're not setting him up offensively in a way to be successful either. And, you know, you look back and Jesus, you look over at New York and Cat is just lighting the fucking world on fire. More on him to come. And it's like, shit, maybe we really did underappreciate all the things that he brought to the table, you know, in terms of being that offensive weapon and being sort of a big body defensively as well, even though, you know, that's not really his strength. He at least made them very big. That's another thing I noticed in this game against Detroit. It's like you got Rudy. And then it's a big drop off when you're going to McDaniels or even Randall. Like you don't have those sort of twin towers, really, really big imposing front court like you did last year, which I think sort of rattled a lot of teams. So yeah, it's there's a lot of issues. Again, I'm not going to blame Anthony Edwards, you know, for this, you know, in any way like I have before with players who get 50 points and losing efforts. Like he did what he could, but he's really got to worry less about the points and more about getting other guys involved. And instead of just making the easy pass out of like the blitz or the double team, try and read where the defense is coming to that guy who's open now, sort of do a pass fake and then get it, you know, to the far corner. Like there's sort of a next level of passing out of, you know, double teams and those type of things that you have to get to rather than just dishing it to the guy who's open. Because that's what the defense expects from you. They're going to sort of rotate over there pretty easily, and then you've kind of lost your advantage. Like, there's a whole other level he needs to unlock to sort of take that next step up. But then, frankly, you look on the other side, I'm more impressed with Cade's 46-9. Like, that's a great stat line.
I mean, not just to show our hand. He's going to be an all-star this year.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, there's levels to how, as a lead ball handler, you can sort of balance the scoring and the playmaking and everything. It's just out of balance for Ant, and just in general, out of balance for Minnesota here. So yeah, there's something they got to do to shake things up, whether that's by trade or, you know, I'm not sure. Like, I really respect, you know, Finch as a guy, you know, a coach who can figure things out. But yeah, it's looking just not good on either side of the ball for Minnesota. And this has been going on for a bit too long now to blame it on the, oh, you know, we're just getting guys acclimated. This might be is a sort of bigger problem that they've got to address.
Yeah, the defense is pretty poopy, to say the least. I mean, you let Malik Beasley splash six threes on you off the bench, you're probably going to lose that basketball game. And also, you know, shout out to the Pistons, you know, getting a big win. They're still fighting out there in the Eastern Conference. They're ninth right now. You know, maybe finally cracking back into the playoffs this season. We'll see. And that was after they lost Jaden Ivey due to that kind of a rough landing by Cole Anthony, snapping his leg there. So, you know, hopefully Ivy comes back, you know, because he was having an underrated season himself. So, you know, hopefully he'll be able to recoup from that one next season, and the Pistons will still be able to kind of stay afloat. My Pistons, shout out to them.
Yeah, shout out your piss.
Moving on, shout out my piss.
Shout out my piss. Alex, shout it out.
Alex, get in there. Moving on. Go out to La La Land, man. More precisely, I believe Inglewood, California. Not quite Los Angeles anymore. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I'm pretty sure it's Inglewood.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right.
The dome is, but the Los Angeles Clippers, currently the seventh seeded team in the Western Conference. I mean, they're having a hell of a season. 20-15. They're only a half game behind the Nuggets and Lakers, at the 4-5. So like they're one of the best teams in the Western Conference, and you know, debatably, the entire NBA right now. They've been without their darling Kawhi Leonard all season long, up until this weekend, getting a big win over the Atlanta Hawks, who have kind of hit a bit of a roadblock here at the midpoint of the season. Not a very competitive matchup. They're running away with this one. I believe it was a 26-point win, if my math checks out there. I was already like, the more and more I've been watching this team, the more I've been paying attention to them. James Harden has been, you know, an awesome leader, which is not really something that I thought we'd be saying much on this podcast, if ever. But he has been leading the squad. Zubac has been a fucking beast every single game. Not to spoil it, not the big dog of the month of December, which we'll be giving out later on in the podcast. But this guy could still be, you know, a quintessential favorite for Big Dog of the Year, because he has just been absolutely killing it on the glass, as well as, you know, getting his scoring numbers way up this year. And then our boy, Norman Powell, has been an absolute fucking lightning bolt for the Clippers. There was a period there for like a week and a half, he was averaging close to 30 damn points per game. He's still averaging around 22, 23 points on the season. You know, maybe some All-Star nods, some All-Star attention. I don't think he'll make it, but I think there's definitely an argument to make for Storm and Norman Powell out there. And now you get Kawhi Leonard back. He only plays 19 minutes in this one. He doesn't shoot the ball particularly well. He gets his 12 points, 3 boards, 1 assist. But this was really just the walkthrough, get him a little bit more
he was literally walking.
Playing there. Yes. I think we'd mentioned it a little bit offhandedly talking about the Clippers a few weeks ago. You know, this is a team that has done so well and exceeded expectations without Kawhi. Will it be beneficial for them to have him come back into the lineup? And, you know, too early to tell right now, but I'll say this. If they can make this work, the Clippers, this might be the best Clippers team they've had in the Kawhi Leonard era, which so weird. So weird to say.
But you, it's what I've been saying since they got together. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George were so not additive for each other. Like the pairing of Kawhi and James Harden makes so much more sense. And even with Kawhi out there fucking walking around, basically, doing a practice run through, already I'm like, I just like this better, the way that they're sort of playing off of each other. Because again, you've got James doing his thing, what he likes to do, dribble the air out of the basketball, set guys up. Like, you know, in this one, he only had 10 points, but 15 big assists. Like, he's back to his, wheeling and dealing ways, which he's great at. And then Kawhi can be the one on the wing who can go, take over when he needs to. Again, this is theoretically when he's healthy. We know what Kawhi can do. In the past, it's just kind of been like a your turn, my turn. Like, this guy gets hot and this other guy doesn't, when we're talking about Kawhi and Paul George. Not to mention, James Harden's just more of a steady, at least in the regular season, but, you know, overall, just sort of as someone who's available, like, he doesn't get hurt as much as either of those other two guys. So he's sort of more of a constant in the lineup and has been all year, like you said, been great for them. And so you don't have to worry about that as much either, where when you had Paul and Kawhi, I was like, oh, this guy's out, this guy's coming back, he's ramping up, now he's out. Like, you can pretty much count on, I mean, you know, you never know with a guy James Harden's age what's going to happen injury wise, but historically you can count on James being out there. And so then you're just dealing with kind of one guy's availability in Kawhi, which is much more manageable. Yeah, the fit just makes so much more sense. Like, and it kind of reminds me just the vibe of how this team has, like you said, kept their head above water while Kawhi has been out, of the Raptors run. When Kawhi didn't play during the Raptors year in 2019, we had a very competent team that knew what they were doing, could run things, with Lowry and Van Vliet in the backcourt. We had sort of guys who could make things happen, set other guys up. You had a strong sort of front court, presence in Gasol and Ibaka. Here you've got Zubac holding it down. Like, it's not a perfect comparison, but I think they've got the right components and ingredients to still be a competent basketball team, which they've shown all year, even when Kawhi isn't there, which is what you need when you have a player like Kawhi. There's lots of players like that. Even we just talked about Jimmy Butler, has sort of similar situation, especially at their this point in their careers. Like, you can't count on them being out there. So if your team really revolves around them, then you're going to kind of suffer here. So the way that they've been set up, with Paul George leaving in the summer, sort of filling out the roster, like, Norman Powell's been great, but even a guy like Derek Jones Jr. off the bench, like, he's such a great lob partner with James Harden. Like, they've already got a great connection. I've put together a bunch of highlights so far this year. They're just a much deeper team. Like, they had 1, 2, 3, 4 guys in this one. It is the Hawks. It's easy to score against them, granted, but 4 guys off the bench in double figures. Like, they've got a deep team. So yeah, I'm loving what the Clippers are doing. Again, I haven't been sort of at that level yet where it's like, oh, they can really challenge to, you know, like, win a playoff series. But like you just said there in the lead in, if Kawhi is back and healthy and ready to go, I might need to change that, because, like, the way these pieces fit together finally really makes sense. And if you've got a competent team and Kawhi's out there, being able to close for you and is that difference maker on both sides of the court, then yeah, you might have to watch out for the Clippers. We still have to deal with James Harden's very patchy playoff resume, but you look at Kawhi's playoff resume when he's healthy, he is a difference maker, period. He doesn't really put up duds when he's got sort of his knees under him. So yeah, this might be a dangerous team. Like you said, too early to tell. Kawhi was, just thrown out there sort of ceremoniously, I guess, in this one. But yeah, if he comes back healthy, watch out.
Yeah, I really like them. I might even give him a little bit of a dark horse tag here. Again, it really will all come down to Kawhi and his health. And again, he could play for 2 weeks, go on a really great stretch here, and then injure himself again, and then he's back out when the playoffs come around. Anyway,
so got to expect it. Yep.
This might not be for anything, but again, they are, like you said, a deep enough team that it, like, if Kawhi is back out and he's not able to play, or if they just need to kind of rest him throughout the year, they can actually take that luxury. In the past, these Clippers teams haven't had the depth to be able to rest Kawhi the way that they needed to. So I'm really interested to see if they can pull that out. Again, Amir Coffey has been solid this year. You were talking about Derek Jones. He's been phenomenal all season long for them. Really one of the better role players across the NBA right now. He's kind of built himself into. Kevin Porter, you're a piece of shit, but you do play basketball well. And he had a great game in this one. He's been really good ever since he got picked up there by the Clippers. And then again, you got guys like Nick Batum. He's coming in there. Old man Nick Batum. Like, that's a solid guy you want. Like, we saw him in the play-in last year. Huge game to get the Sixers even into the playoffs last season. So I'm huge on this team, honestly. I do think they've kind of got that next man up mentality. And I think that I would actually put my stamp on it, like maybe one of the scariest offenses to have to face in the playoffs if they can all kind of keep firing Kawhi's the way they there. Are. Yep. James Harden, healthy Kawhi, and Norman Powell trio is going at you, and you've got to deal with 7'1" Zubas, who is just punishing everything at the rim right now. I think this is a team that really could surprise some people, and you know, maybe even put someone on upset watch, especially. Let's say they get 7 or 6 here. They play Houston or Memphis in the first round. That would be one of the worst matchups that either of those squads could possibly ask for. So going to be really interesting to see what they can kind of pull out here as the season goes. And we will keep a close eye on our old friend Kawhi Leonard because you never know what can happen. That guy's an enigma. That guy is truly unpredictable in the NBA.
Correct. Yeah, we'll see. And again, as long as he doesn't come back and sort of mess up the flow that they've got going on. And I think he's actually pretty good at doing that. I think he's underrated as a guy who's just going to come in. If anything, when he comes back from injury, it takes him longer than people want to sort of get more aggressive. But I think in this case, that's good. Like, he's going to work his way in. You know, hopefully if there's no setbacks, I mean, there will be a setback injury wise. It's Kawhi, but you know, pie in the sky thinking, whatever. Like, if this was a normal player coming back, you know, he's going to work his way in slowly. I think he's good at doing that. And so long as he doesn't, you know, throw off Norman Powell's groove or James Harden's, then I think he can step right in, fill a really sort of a big need for this team. And then it's can't believe I'm saying this, but I agree with you. This version of this team is my favorite of and the one I think can actually do the most damage, and it's fun, of all of the Kawhi teams, which is pretty crazy. The Kawhi Clippers teams, I should say.
Yes. And moving on here, though, to a team that has really fallen short of expectations this season, and I really do think, and I said the Timberwolves might be time to hit the panic button. I think they've got it out on the desk. The Phoenix Suns have to be fucking smacking the shit out of the panic button over and over and over. Smack that. All up on the floor. The Suns, this is I don't want to say season from hell. It's just a confusing season. 15-18 right now. They are still a game and a half back from the Timberwolves for the 10 seed right now. They're only three and a half games, I should say, over the Trailblazers. Like, this is a fucking horrible season. 4 straight losses for the Suns. They dealt with some injuries earlier on in the year. But we kind of like we said this last year, obviously they've got a lot of different talent. They made some good amendments here to the lineup to get better. But I just don't know how they can make this season work now. I really don't. You got old man Kevin Durant and you got prime Devin Booker, who are playing at like an all NBA all-star level, 27-6 for KD on the season. Devin Booker's just under 25 points per game, 6 assists. The Bradley Beal move, why did they ever do it? That's still, like, he's having a decent season. He's actually been able to stay relatively healthy for Bradley Beal over the past 5-6 years, but still misses time. But, like, outside of that, the bench was something that they upgraded, but we still said not really good enough to compete in, like, the loaded Western Conference. You got Yusuf Nurkic as your starting five, which we've seen that you just can't win with him at the five as your starting big man. So I just I'm honestly a little bit confused of how this team is so bad. Like I could see them, you know, maybe hanging around that 6 to 8 seed mark, but like I thought they would still be able to, you know, make the playoffs. Like right now, I don't know, man. Like they might not even make the play-in at this point if they can't figure this out, because it just doesn't seem like there's all that much urgency from them. Even with all these losses, they just are kind of rolling with the punches, taking it for what it is, and moving on. And it's like, I think someone needs to, you know, maybe start throwing some comments out in the media, trying to get a fire lit under their asses, because you know, Frank Vogel has never really been known to be that guy. So Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, one of you guys is going to have to really shake things up here, or else the season might be gone already.
Yeah, well, you just mentioned, you know, Vogel was never that guy. Now Budenholzer, who they got in there, was supposed to be the sort of big sort of addition that was going to unlock how they played offensively, you know, get more threes up, you know, and I think that's a big part of what we both mentioned, you know, bringing an experienced coach like that, who in the playoffs has his faults, but you can't criticize his regular season record when you're looking at the Hawks teams, when you're looking at the Bucks teams. They were great, and they were just sort of wins factories, and I thought that's what was going to happen here. But again, they are 25th defensively in defensive rating. They
offense
are just god
okay,
awful.
But the defense is fucking dead. Train wreck.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're top 10, 10th right now, offensive rating. They should be better than that if you're betting on Durant, Booker, and Beal as sort of your, you know, what you're spending all your money on, these supposedly, you know, all world scorers, which they are. But, you know, we've been on the same page about the Beal move this entire time. It's just utterly ridiculous, stupid move that has not worked out in any sort of way. But again, like, defensively, you just mentioned Nurkic as their starting center. He is awful. He got a DNP in this last game against Indiana. They put the plum dog in there, you know, in his place, which I think might be the better move. But then you're saying, we've got, is it Miles? It's Miles, right?
It's Mason.
It's Mason. Sorry.
Yeah. Miles didn't used to play for the Suns, though.
Yes, you're right. You're right. They look very different, but, you know, the names. But yeah, Mason, you know, at least he's out there and can get physical and sort of get a few rebounds. And, you know, he's not a rim protector, but I would say he's more of an interior defender than Nurk is. That's your better option. But then, like, my God, that's got to be the worst starting center in all of basketball, probably, because he just doesn't bring anything to the table on offense. And then, yeah, you're just like, depending on your rookie Ryan Dunn, to make things happen. But again, he's sort of fallen off from the hot shooting earlier on in the year. And you know, you're trying to get these contributions defensively from your bench guys, like, you know, Grayson Allen, he competes out there, but he's nothing special. Monte Morris is very small for a point guard. Like he filled that point guard need for them that we were both screaming for all of last year. But again, defensively, he doesn't do much for you. So, you know, it's just, The team is so out of whack in terms of the balance, and you know, in this one against Indiana, who you're supposed to be able to beat up on and put a bunch of points up, you've got Kevin Durant playing 38 minutes, 36 for Devin Booker, and 33 for Bradley Beal. First of all, Bradley Beal only has 8 points. So again, you're betting on offense. It's not physically possible for those three guys to have like amazing games all at once. There's only one ball to go around. Like the odds of them all perfectly sharing it between the three of them, all having great like 20 plus point games efficiently, it's never going to happen. So then you're just sort of, you've got this glorified six man, which is what Bradley Beal really should be, you know, who you're paying God knows how much this year, to sort of, again, be around the perimeter standing there and providing absolutely nothing defensively. Like that is still the major problem. But you go down the line, they just haven't, even though they filled out their team, and I think it's much better than it was last year, they haven't really addressed any of the major needs. And that's, they've just made that impossible to do with that Beal contract there on the books. So it's like, you know, they're just stuck.
With a no trade clause.
With a no trade clause. So definitely time to panic. I really don't know what they can do internally to change things. Again, they could get healthier, but that's the other issue, that those top three guys that they've got do not have a long history of being on the court for extended stretches and being fully healthy. And just the last point, the other thing that I fully agree with that I think people are pointing out now is this team was built for back in like 2016 or 15, when the big three model was really the thing, you know, when you'd have your you get as talented and as good as three players as you can get, and the rest you'll fill out with minimums, you know, in the Heat model. Yeah. Eric Dampier, Mike Bibby, all you know, this was something that teams really tried for a while, and it worked because there were so many shitty tanking teams, and the league just wasn't as good. You could get away mm-hmm. with it. You can't get away with it anymore when you've got these three guys, and one of them with an albatross contract, and then just a bunch of subpar role players. That's just a recipe for getting your ass spanked, which is what happened last year in the playoffs and what's been happening this year. And it just wasn't enough of a change. Not only are they in a bad spot, but they might not really be able to get out of it, which is a not enviable position for the Suns.
No. Well, we'll keep a close eye on them and see if maybe they want to shake things up down the stretch of the season, or maybe they'll find a way to get over this hump. But I would say things are going south very fast right now in Phoenix, which is
The Kings just fired their coach, and they've got a better record. They're ahead of the Suns in the standings now. So what does that tell you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're riding a win streak of their own. So, yeah, who knows? Maybe they'll be able to figure this thing out. But only time will tell on that one. Moving on. Talk some All-Star talk here, Jordan. We're going to be giving out our All-Star teams soon enough. We'll get a little bit closer to when the actual NBA All-Stars are going to be announced officially. But the first ballots have been returned. And shockingly, I would say shockingly, because it's just been like it was weird to see it not be. But the leading vote getters, Giannis Antetokounmpo and Nikola Jokic, not LeBron James. I was honestly stunned. Not only was LeBron not the number one vote getter or number two vote getter, he wasn't number three. He wasn't number four, five. He's third in the front court for the Western Conference. Yep. But he's below multiple players across the league right now. He actually only edged out LaMelo Ball by like 50,000 votes. This is honestly insane. Like Karl Anthony Towns is getting, or pardon me, actually, I take that back. I was looking at Anthony Davis's number four. LeBron did break a million, but barely over Karl Anthony Towns, which is something I think if you told somebody last year, they would probably be laughing in your face. But I thought that was weird, but I do appreciate that, you know, some of the better players across the league are getting the recognition. Giannis was like the resounding favorite, or resounding leading vote getter, 1.7 million to Jokic's 1.4 as the second highest vote getter. So it stands right now, after the first ballots returned, Western Conference, you got SGA and Luka in the backcourt, with Jokic, Durant, and LeBron as your front court. Over in the East, you got LaMelo Ball and Donovan Mitchell as your guards, and Giannis, Jason Tatum, and Karl Anthony Towns as your front court members. Let's just talk about the starting fives here. And you made your noise there. Yeah, how the fuck did LaMelo Ball end up as the leading vote getter?
Well, I know it's not that surprising though. I guess when you think about it, like the amount of 12-year-olds who can go on to NBA.com and vote. I mean, he is the Instagram darling, you know, and to be fair, he's put up a shitload of crazy numbers, stat lines this year. And obviously he's very, he's just a highlight friendly player. So it's not that surprising, but at number one, like I would have thought for sure, when you're looking at Donovan Mitchell or Dame or even Jalen Brunson, who I'm shocked has less than 500,000 votes. Especially considering Kat has over a million.
He's got almost 80,000 more votes than Luka, and he's got over 100,000 more votes than Steph Curry. And Steph Curry has been one of the top two vote getters for like 4 years in a row. So I'm just really stunned by the numbers.
Yes. No, me too. Yeah. The LeBron and Steph of this all is kind of crazy that they are, not at the very top of these lists for the first time in God knows how long. It is signaling, you know, a bit of a changing of the guard here. If you're talking about the LaMelo thing again, this is what the fan voting is for, to get the guys that are fun, and not necessarily would make it sort of on their own winning sort of basketball merits, a shot at making it in here, and that's fine. But yeah, he definitely doesn't deserve to be over those three guys below him. I mean, you can maybe make the argument for Dame. He hasn't had the best year, but you know, he's turned it on recently. Certainly not Donovan Mitchell, Jalen Brunson, even Trae Young. Where he is as an assist per game leader, you could certainly make the argument of him more deserving than LaMelo. But you know, again, I want to give the kids their fun. They can vote in whoever they want.
Jordan Poole, number eight.
Yeah, you've got Jordan Poole in there. That's got to be a joke. You know, I for a second there, I was like, wait, Derek White is over Jalen Brown. I forgot Jalen Brown was technically on the front court of this one. Mm-hmm. Sneaks in there in the fifth spot in the East. Yeah, like I truly cannot believe that the amount that Kat has and yeah. You know, the disparity between Kat and Jalen Brunson. Like, I don't know. That is happening. I know he's very popular, you know, with the Knicks fans, and has been playing really well, especially recently. So that could explain it a bit. But yeah, I would have expected someone like Brunson to be leading in those Eastern Conference guards. But hey, yeah, LaMelo's got a strong army out there for him, I guess.
Yeah, it seems that way. The front court for the East, I do think is, like, as it sits right now, pretty much perfect. Giannis, Tatum, Kat. Yep. I don't think anyone's really going to argue too much with that. And
we've
then
got
the
number
West,
21 on the Sixers. Yes, there. He did make it in, even though he's barely played.
Keep him down.
He's there.
The West, though, is pretty wild as well. I mean, SGA, I assumed, yeah, he'd be in there. Luka, the number two. You know, I Not shocking. I know he's been out a little bit this season, but probably still deserving to be in there. Honestly, the Western Conference guards, it's crazy that we look back, like we always, like the Western Conference All-Star, you know, to make it as a guard was so hard for years and years and years. You look at it now, it's
Norman
not
Powell.
Competitive, man. Norman Powell's top 10. He's like, you still there. Got Booker, Fox, Jaw, Harden is 6, Ant at 5, Kyrie Irving at number 4. Like, it's not that crazy anymore. Like, it's pretty, like, open-ended now, and not, like, in a great way. But, I mean, you look at the fucking Western Conference front court, it's at least gotten a little bit better. I'm honestly shocked that Wembanyama's only at 5. I thought he was going to be a top vote-getter. Like, Kevin Durant having more than LeBron is honestly really shocking.
And I'm surprised, Wembanyama's got less than Anthony Davis. Like, who loves Anthony Davis that much? I mean,
Lakers fanboys, yeah. Well, LeBron sexuals are probably pairing them up just for the sake of it. But I'm really shocked that, Wemby's not in there, especially the way he's been playing this season.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm shocked at that. I'm surprised Şengün is at 6. Like, I know he's been playing great, but he still doesn't seem very much like a household name to a lot of casual fans. But hey,
I feel like they're just throwing a rocket in there, you know, just because they're a good team. I think he's probably the only one you would even really consider.
True,
but again, looking through it, I don't think I even noticed this at first. Andrew Wiggins,
yeah, I know. What's he doing?
He's back in there. He's in the mix.
What
at eighth
is he
place.
Doing?
He could do it, man. Everyone vote for Wiggins. Let's go. I voted 180,000 times, and it's
of course. Yeah, that makes
we're getting him.
That explains
getting
it.
Him back in there. He deserves it. It's not an All-Star game without Wiggins. That's what I've always been saying.
You're right. You're right. But
that's
know,
my solution to solve the All-Star game. Actually,
you look at, like, Anthony Edwards is another shock to me too. Only at 5, I would have expected him to be up there challenging for, you know, a top 3 at least. And
Sprite commercials aren't helping his stock.
No, they're really not. But only 400 or, you know, just over 400,000 votes. Like, I don't know. I would have expected him because, again, you look at, like, we just talked about LaMelo and sort of the online presence that he has. I feel like Anthony Edwards is sort of another one of those guys there.
Oh,
he's just got a lot of you know, fans, despite how sort of disappointing the Timberwolves have been this year. Like, everyone knows, or at least a lot of people know who Anthony Edwards is. So yeah, that's another shocker. I'm surprised he's not higher on the list. It is weird seeing Steph technically out of it right now in that third spot. But, you know, SGA and Luka, that makes sense to me, even though Luka's not been playing. But I'm also happy to see SGA getting, you know, being far and away the top vote getter in terms of Western guards, because he deserves it. And I think he's been underdeserved, you know, for the past couple years, compared to how great his play has been.
Well, the next update for the fan voting is going to be January 9th. So be on the lookout for that. Before we move on from that, I do want to mention this because I'm kind of confused still. So the All-Star game format's changed. We've talked about it. Everybody understands it. You know, it's going to be divided into 3 teams with, you know, Kenny, Shaq, and Chuck GMing these squads, which is entertaining. Yep. And then you have the Rising Stars team, the winner between the 2 Rising Stars games. Whatever, that's fine. You
I
know,
think Candace Parker's the GM
works.
For them. Is that right? Is it Candace?
I think it might be, yeah. But here's my thing. Why are we still voting by conference then? If the teams are going to be completely fucking jumbled up, it's going to be East and West together, blah, 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 like all this. Like, and now you've got the whole the Rising Stars side of it. Like, we don't need conferences. Just do 15 top All-Stars, whatever. Like, it doesn't need to be this. Or again, just go back to East versus West and just fucking let it go. Just let it go. The All-Star game will be what it is. there's not much you can do at this point, in my opinion. But yes. I am very confused as to why we have to do East and West if it's going to be all jumbled up anyways.
I agree with that. Yeah, if you're going to change it, change the voting. Because again, like certain things I'm sort of with the league on in terms of leaving it so that the historical record isn't all messed up, but mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter. Like if you're an all-star, you're an all-star, like Eastern and West. It honestly kind of has been, well, we've seen that it's been unfair in the past, especially with the East.
So
some of the guys who get in the East and guys who miss it in the West is like a travesty. So this would be
Andrew
a good
Wiggins
chance.
Only one appearance. That's fucked up.
yes, it's fucked. But you know, this would be a good chance to actually write that a little bit. Yeah. If you're going to mm-hmm. change the format anyway, I totally agree there, but the league is very traditional too much of the time.
Yeah. Well, to move in here, penultimate segment here on the podcast, a quick update, jersey retirements. It scares me. One of my greatest fears, lay awake at night wondering what happens when all the jerseys are retired. What do we do? I don't want to fucking see a whole starting five
just for those
guys
teams
with the number 80s. Yeah, that's but true. It's gonna look at the Celtics, man. They've already got like fucking 50 numbers. The Lakers, fuck. I don't like it. I hate it. I'm not actually kind of against jersey retirement.
Statute of limitations, like after our 50 years, just unretire it. When the person dies.
Yeah, yeah. As long as you're alive, no one will wear. Yeah. Once you're dead, why do you need to have that? You have your. True. You can still have like a wall of fame, whatever. Yeah, you can hang the banner with their jersey on it, but fucking, we don't need to have all this other shit, man. But the latest jersey retirement, a very cool one, one for the culture. Chicago Bulls officially announcing they're going to retire Derrick Rose's number one. Cool to see. A nice little announcement there they had. Joakim Noah was speaking as well in this one. Those Bulls teams, again, I think that's like our generation's old head teams that we all look back on. They never won anything. Like they got to the conference finals one time. But the Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Carlos Boozer, Luol Deng, Kirk Heinrich, Joakim Noah, awesome teams, really good, like
Keith Bogans.
Actually good. Keith Bogans, yeah. Aaron Brooks was on those teams, I think. They had some squads. Omar Oshik. Omar Oshik, yeah. We could get some polls in here. We'd just sit around here naming polls from the late 2010s, early 2010s, late 2000s. Yes. But yeah, they had amazing rosters, great runs. Tibbs had those guys, those young boys moving. A young Jimmy Butler, even. You were talking about him already. He was a big part of those teams.
Nate Robinson came in there eventually. He was
Nate
fun.
Robinson, yes. The LeBron father. He was a dog. But yeah, this was, I think, a long time coming. The youngest MVP in league history. We've kind of talked a bit about whether he'd be a Hall of Famer or not. And I still think that's maybe a debate. I am glad that the Bulls are honoring him and they will retire number one. He was a Chicago kid. Getting picked overall, first overall that year, I believe it was 2008, was a really great moment for the league. It was very cool to see, in the grand scheme of the basketball world. His impact on the game was huge. And again, still one of the most popular basketball players on the planet, I would say, is Derrick Rose. And he's been retired now for a year. So really cool to see, and definitely a jersey retirement I can get behind.
Yeah, 100%. Shut it out. It was inevitable. I think everyone sort of knew it was a well-deserved sort of thing. I don't think he's quite at like statue level in Chicago, but like you said, he's one of the most popular guys. In the post Jordan era, he is the most popular Bull. I think very easy to say, and that's been
I think
25 years.
He's the best Bull they ever had.
And
especially I don't think there's anybody else.
He's an MVP. Yeah. So, it's everyone's always going to, feel every NBA fan around our age is going to feel, frankly, a bit sad about how his career panned out. Because, again, he was just so exciting. He was one of the most electric, athletic and creative finishing point guards we've ever seen. A well-deserved MVP. I don't want to hear anyone say, LeBron actually deserved it that year. No, we were there. We watched it. He was absolutely awesome that year. I'm pretty sure the Bulls were the number one seed. They were great. Everything ran through him. It was 100% deserved. And one of the greatest sort of what if questions. I think we did a what if episode at some point. Recently,
go back and
listen to that one.
We covered it all.
Yes, we really have. But we talk about D Rose's career at length. But 100% well deserved over there in Chicago.
Well, looking and moving on, finish out the podcast. It's January, Jordan, and that means December's passed. And that means it's time for the big dog of the month.
Right, right, right. Oh, there he is.
Oh, shit. He's big foaming dog, at the mouth.
Monkey. Oh, my
Get him
God.
Out of here. Get him out. Escort him out Get of out here. Out of here. Yeah, we don't Alex. Need that in here. Alex, figure this shit out,
Professional.
Man. You're supposed to be having the rabies shots with the big dog ball talk monkey. You got to figure this out. We got him rabid. He was supposed to be cured by now. Yeah. We'll see.
Hasn't worked.
But big dog of the month, where Jordan and I give out our staple award of the podcast for the player that month that exemplified what it means to be a big dog, going down low, fighting for those boards, crashing the glass, throwing your elbows out there, boxing out, diving for loose balls, setting hard screens, just doing what it means to be a big dog.
Yep.
And we've been talking about this guy actually quite a bit in this podcast. Jordan actually unveiled, he said who it was earlier. No one caught it.
Nope.
Not a single person. he's probably going to be an all-star starter in the Eastern Conference front court. He's led the league in rebounds across the month of December. He's been a pivotal part of one of the best teams in the NBA with the New York Knicks. It is Carl Big Purr. Big Bodega.
Big Bodega.
Anthony Towns. What a season it's been for him. His first ever Big Dog of the Month award, I believe. I'll say this. Up until this year, I don't think we would have ever even considered Cap for Big Dog.
Oh, God. I would have laughed it off.
He is so soft. He was so soft. He is a man. He is a real man now.
He has grown into a real man. He moved to New York. Mm-hmm. He got hardened like a fucking rat on the streets of New York. And now, my God, some of these rebounding numbers.
You saw that woman get lit on fire, motivated him.
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Alex, edit that out.
I don't know the details of that. Awful. But, right from the start, he had a 19 rebound game, then 15, 16, 15, mm-hmm. 19, and then back-to-back 20 rebound games, including a 32-20 against his former team. The Timberwolves had to be some extra motivation there. Went 5-for-5 that game from three, by the way. My goodness. He's really just, we talked about the Knicks in the last episode, how they've really come into their own. It really is Cat. Like, he is the big difference from the Knicks team last year to this year. Obviously, Mikal Bridges as well. But Cat is the one that's like...
No, so what you're going to say. I was going to just say he might be the best player on the team.
Well, I think, we just talked about the All-Star voting. That's really what... I think the sort of sneaky takeaway is like Jalen Brunson, I think, is obviously a better player, but he hasn't had to be as good this year because of, all sort of the other guys that have been incorporated into this. But Cat is sort of that to a T, just the guy who's come in, finally looks comfortable. I shouldn't say finally, but, there was a, part of the beginning of the season where he was sort of learning the ropes, learning how to sort of fit in with the rest of the squad. He really looks like he's figured it out. In the month of December, I mean, he's kind of a flashy player to give the big dog of the month to, but 23 points, 15 boards, 3.5 assists almost. Just awesome. Yeah. And I never would have really pegged him as a league leader in rebounds per game type of guy, but that's where he's at. And the fact that he's doing that and stretching the floor on offense just proves how mobile he's been, how fucking so much energy he's playing with. He's setting great screens for guys like Brunson and Bridges, all these other guys. Like he's out there doing that dirty work. And he's really changed the way I think of him as a player for the last couple months with the Knicks. Like, he has grown up and he really does deserve this award. Which is crazy to say.
Well, shout out to Carl Anthony Towns, big dog of the month of December, joining Nikola Jokic and Jakob Poeltl as recipients of big dog of the month so far. We will be glued to our NBA devices, whatever you like to watch it on, streaming services, legal or illegal, seeing who will be big dog of the month in January. And we want to hear from you guys. So let us know at Big Dog Ball Talk, X, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. We want to hear from you guys who you want to see as big dog of the month. Get your nominees in there, as well as let us know what your favorite trade destination would be for Jimmy Butler. As we're recording this, that pesky bastard Ashiba, we were talking about how bad the Suns are. He says he would extend. He'd give Jimmy Butler
a lucrative
extension.
New contract, which is that would be great. Hilarious. What an incredible owner you are, Matt Ishbia. You don't you don't overspend. You don't make panic moves. That's for sure.
It'll work out really well, I'm sure, if they're ones that get him. I'm not sure who they give up for him. Devin Booker? Yeah, that'd be good. make it work. But let us know at Big Dog Ball Talk. Give us your takes. Give us a follow. Help us help you. Give us just help us grow. Just help us do it. Help us get there. Yep. We'll actually start posting stuff if you follow us. If we get 5 followers, we'll do it. Yeah. 5 more followers. We have at least 5 followers probably.
We've got so many. I can't even count them, man.
Yeah, it's a time. But we'll be back on Friday, as this will be coming up on Monday. Recording this on Sunday, but it will be coming out on Monday. We'll be talking to you guys back on Friday, recapping everything that's going to be going on in the week. Can't wait to see. Maybe a Jimmy Butler special trade announcement we'll go through, and we'll have a little extra podcast there for you guys. So Be on the lookout for that. This has been Matt Eichhorn, Jordan Flegel, Big Dog Ball Talk. And as my good friend Jordan always says,
Stick to your resolutions, Matt. I want to hear your New Year's resolutions. You gave them all to teams in our last episode, which was very nice. Mine, tell me what you think of this. My initial one obviously was to lose some weight. We're on camera. You know, we're getting older. It's harder. But it's always sort of on the radar. My other one, which I feel really sort of passionate about, is to eat at all you can eat buffets more, because I feel like I haven't been doing that in recent years. It's been so long, you know. I got to go to the Mandarin. There's great ones all throughout Toronto that I need to go to. So those are a bit conflicting. If I stick to both, nothing might really happen. But you know, it's okay. I do feel strongly about both of those. But I want to hear yours, Matt. Give it to me.
I fuck with that heavy. I actually might adopt that one because that sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah, I would love to.
We used to go get all you can eat sushi all the time. Hey, shout out Owen Sound. It's been a while.
I found an all you can eat sushi place not far from us here in the Sarnhole. So I went there. It was great, man. I was going hard on it. They definitely have it's a very white town here in southern Ontario. So they've got all these weird sushi rolls that are like I've never seen them before, like cream cheese and onion rings. It literally is called the Sarnia roll, the Lambton roll. It's weird shit, man. That I'm like,
the whites are out of control.
Yes, they are out of control. Pickle, it was a pickle roll. It was literally just pickle and like something. I don't even know what it was. It was pickle, right? I was like, come on, let's just get the fish in there. You know, get the wasabi, the ginger. You know, let's keep it traditional here. But for me, Jordan, I always go way too hard on my New Year's resolutions. I'm like, you know, I'm just going to set like 6 goals and I'm going to fail at all of them and then feel even worse. Like you said, trying to exercise as much as I possibly can. I'm trying to set the bar 5 days a week, get my diet fixed up a little bit, which, you know, maybe I could do at an all-you-can-eat buffet. There's a lot of options out there. And then I would love to, put some money away, keep saving, keep building. And then this is the biggest challenge, Jordan, because we both know what we like to party here. We've got Ball Talk, but I'm trying to cut it down. Drinking, smoking, cutting it down. Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays only. Can I do it? Can I do it? Can I do it? Let's find out.
Boo.